This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Well, guess what? I am not Linda Swain. I am Tim Powers, who has the honor of sitting in for Linda Swain today. I wonder if they designed that introduction knowing I was going to sit in today. Politics, education, and crime. It sounds like my youth. No, of course, I was a good young man. Today, though, we're going to talk about something a little bit different, but of course, it's connected to COVID, and no, it's not going to be the Atlantic bubble. I'll stay away from that to a large degree today. People know how I feel about that. We're going to talk about sports and how sports are doing in this time of COVID, particularly amateur sports. You turn on the television last night, or the last number of nights, you will have seen the World Series. I think there was an NFL game on last night. Pro sports are generally back with different restrictions and different challenges, but amateur sport is back and not back at different places throughout the country. And how are we doing in Newfoundland and Labrador? And before I bring my first guest on, Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador, I just want to remind you of a bit of data that VOCM was shared on VOCM by our polling company Abacus in May, because I think a lot of it still has a pertinence and a relevance to our discussion today. So in May, Abacus released a poll that VOCM reported on that said, return to sports, important part of COVID recovery for most Canadians. We sampled about 1,400 people, and we found that none of this probably surprises you, but let's set the parameters here. The company found one in four Canadian adults regularly took part in such activities organized towards physical activity before the pandemic. That works out to be about 8.1 million Canadians. Poll also found that one in two Canadians, so that's about 13.5 million Canadians, have children who play organized sport or group physical activities. We asked at that time in May, which seems like years ago now, 2020, the longest year in the history of humankind, perhaps, we asked people what they thought about how sports should be governed during this pandemic. And again, different phases, different applications now across all the country. But just to remind you of this baseline data, then I'll bring Troy into the conversation. We asked, when distancing restrictions are lifted, it will be very important to find ways to allow people to play organized sports and take part in group physical activities again because of the impact they have on mental and physical health. Do you agree or disagree? 63% of Canadians agreed with that. We also asked, when distancing restrictions are lifted, the risk of virus spreading will be too great, and we shouldn't allow people to play an organized sport or take part in group physical activities until there's a vaccine. 37% of people thought that was okay. Who knows when the vaccine is coming? Hopefully we're closer to it than we have been before, but that remained a factor. So that was May. We're now in October, creeping towards November. Halloween's next week, and depending where you are in the country, you can or can't go trick-or-treating. So let me bring in, as I said, my guest, Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador. Troy, how are you?
Good, Tim. Thanks. Thanks for having me again, and hope things are well with you.
No, thank you. They're okay. We're in a bit of a lockdown here in Ottawa. It's a hot spot, and has a direct impact on sport, as you may have heard. As I was chatting with Carrie, our program director, before you came on air, my son can't go back to hockey. It's all delayed, so it's having a direct impact on us. But let me start with this question: how is the Newfoundland and Labrador sporting community and the associations and organizations you represent doing right now in October? What are the highs and what are the lows, Troy?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, you know, we've come a long way since May and April, May, when the summer sports started getting up and running, like I say, as you mentioned. And, you know, we're definitely in a different space. I think we've had, you know, we've used the summer sports as a bit of a trial run, I guess, in terms of, you know, making sure we're following the proper protocols. And, of course, we're taking our guidance from public health. But, you know, I think for the most part, most of our sports are now up and running in some capacity. There's still maybe one or two outliers that for, you know, whatever reason, mostly the liability piece, have decided not to operate at this point in time. But for the most part, most of our sports up and running. They've heard the cries from the people that need their children in these sports and stuff like that. As you said, to, you know, get them active again, you know, get them involved in some sort of an activity. So, the summer went well. Our summer sports did a great job from all accounts, from what I can understand and what I've seen in terms of following the guidelines that public health put in place. Definitely lots of questions throughout the summer in terms of clarification on guides and stuff like that. So, you know, we worked very closely with public health, and, the summer went well. We didn't hear of any major issues throughout the summer. And now, of course, we're getting into our winter sports, and, a lot of those are, starting up and starting their practices and skills and drills type of activities and transitioning into games at a later date, I guess. But from all accounts, I mean, everything seems to be up, and I don't think it's where I think everybody would like it to be at this time. It's certainly not back to, you know, full-on sport activity as we knew it prior to COVID. But I think everything is, for the most part, up and running, and people do have opportunities to get involved in some sort of activity at some level, for sure.
And that's so vital, as the data we shared from Abacus said, and as you've just reinforced. So there's a few things that come out of your answer there that I want to probe on. The issue of liabilities. You'll recall we talked about it when it happened during the summer. Premier Fury, when he was campaigning to be premier, one of the policy items he talked about was bringing forward some form of liability to protect volunteers, coaches, others against any unjust suits that were brought forward by whomever because of COVID-19. Has there been any progress on that yet?
I know we've had a little bit of back and forth with the province on that, and I know they are working towards something in terms of helping, our groups mitigate any issues that might come up. We don't have an answer yet in terms of what that might look like, but I know there has been a number of conversations internally in terms of what that needs to look like for our province. I guess people, they're referencing BC where they have it in place. Now, the difference, I guess, in BC is they are in a state of emergency out there, so that's certainly a little bit different than what we're in right here. So they are definitely working through it and, trying to understand, the full parameters that need to happen in terms of making something like that happen. So no definitive answer yet, but I do know there is some ongoing discussions within government around that piece for sure.
Yeah, Ontario, just for listeners' purposes, came forward this week with a version of a liability. BC's is also a version. They're not, surprisingly, as promised originally, full coverage, but they're better than nothing. Quebec also has one. Just before we go to break, because time flies already, we're almost at break, Troy. Let me ask you this. Many sports are driven by registration. That's where they get the money, and obviously the higher the registration numbers, the better the opportunity for the organization to fulfill its mandate to members and ensure our activities are run in the best, most effective and safe way. What have you seen across sports so far in terms of registration? Is there a decline? Are they holding steady? What are you seeing?
For the most part, from what we've seen with our members is, I guess, depending on the sport, but for the most part, registrations are down, of course, number one. Especially, I think we'll see more of that as we head into the indoor sports because with the guidelines that are in place, there's less ice time, less gym time, that sort of thing. But, depending on the sport, summer activities, most were definitely down, but I don't think it was as severe as we thought it was going to be because I think people were just hungry to get out on the fields and on the pitches and have some form of activity. But for sure, registrations were definitely down, and whether or not that's going to continue as a trend into the winter sports as we move indoors, I would suspect, because like I say, there's definitely less ice time and gym time and court time available due to the restrictions. There's still lots of activity, and they managed what they could and took on as many members as they could. So I think everybody's, especially with the relief that we may get into a little later in our discussions, that's certainly going to help out as well.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Back with more of Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador, here on Target St. John's shortly.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Welcome back. Well, as you can probably tell by the voice, I am not Linda. I'm Tim Powers sitting in for Linda. Honored to do so. And I'm joined this segment by Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador. We were just talking about COVID-19 and its impact on sporting groups. And Troy raised a point about provincial and federal funding. We'll get to that in a sec. I want to pick up on something else first, Troy, and that is the economic impact of COVID-19 on the amateur sporting community. And I guess I'm asking this through a couple of lenses. One is employment and the people who work for the different organizations. What have you seen happen there is point one. And point two, tournaments, team travel, sport generates a ton of economic activity. Anybody who went to the Brier in Newfoundland, the National Brier, three, 4 years ago, will know the economic impact there, over $10 million of direct spend. So, Troy, on the employment front, have there been jobs that have been lost, or have organizations been able to maintain employees so far?
Yeah, for the most part, most of the organizations that we represent, they have been able to, but it was really close. I mean, we got down to, you know, the wire when it turned in terms of, you know, the guidance that allowed sports to open up. So there were definitely a lot of organizations that were about to make some tough decisions and were, no doubt had to make those decisions because there was no programming, there was no revenue to support staff. But at the end of the day, I think, everybody survived that for the most part, from what I've seen from our members. Now, there might have been, some situations at the local levels down in the grassroots levels where they may not have been able to hire as many staff because of the number of kids able to participate in an activity. But at the PSO level, for sure, for the most part, we certainly were close. But from what I understand, most we were able to avoid that for the most part.
That's positive to hear, because as you know, most national sports organizations are just getting decimated in large measure when it comes to employees and having to lay people off, even with the very helpful federal wage subsidy program. On the broader economic impact, the hotel rooms, the meals at restaurants. I mean, in Newfoundland and Labrador, we'd be in the millions of dollars, I'm assuming, in sport tourism just from the work your associations do. I assume there's been a precipitous drop, has there, because there aren't these tournaments and engagements that normally would be happening.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think recently this week, I believe Hospitality Newfoundland Labrador, I think they held a meeting, maybe their annual meeting, and certainly that was the message that came out of that meeting in terms of the economic impact that, not just the sport industry, but the whole province in terms of not being able to travel, that sort of thing for a lot of the summer. So, but yeah, definitely with no provincials being able to take place right now in the province and haven't been able to for the summer and not for the foreseeable future, of course. It's no doubt having an impact, and especially on the smaller communities, because a lot of the smaller communities around the province, they certainly rely on these types of events, for their survival. So when you got, a lot of small communities on the Northern Peninsula or, central Newfoundland, Labrador, wherever it might be, that rely on these tournaments throughout the summer months and stuff like that. So definitely with no provincial tournaments being able to take place, it's certainly had an impact, and I think we can see it across the board in any industry in the province for sure.
And if I'm correct, none are planned right at this moment until there's greater clarity, both from public health in Newfoundland and Labrador, and also in the regions on the progress of COVID. Nobody's planning any tournaments right now. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. No. Right now, provincial health is providing guidance where there's no provincial tournaments, and I guess that's essentially to avoid mass gatherings. There's certainly instances where games and stuff like that, matches between two teams, have been taking place, but provincial tournaments, they're certainly trying to avoid those, especially when you have to bring people across health regions at this point in time. So within the health regions, they're okay with tournaments, but when you have to bring mass teams, multiple teams, especially with kids tournaments, when they're bringing family, parents and stuff like that, they're just trying to avoid those gatherings at this point in time. So from what I understand, there's been no discussions at this point in time to change that. But again, as everything is fluid, and this is changing day by day, week by week, so you never know what might happen.
Yeah, there's talk, as you know, many sports organizations might try, as airlines and other entities are, to get rapid testing kits when they become available, but that's another cost. Who bears all that? You and I could talk for hours about all of this, but let's talk money for the moment. A few weeks ago, the federal and provincial government announced a $2 million emergency support fund for sport. Some of that, or most of that, was federal money that came from, I think, the Sport Restart program. How has that helped, and how will that help?
Yeah, so they rolled out the application, and so a lot of our members now are starting to apply for that funding, and that's definitely going to help out our organizations. And like I say, it'll go towards things like, you know, operational protocols that are now in place. So obviously a lot of our sports have had to take on cleaning protocols and, you know, PPE, and, you know, they're required to take on additional expenses, you know, increased programming expenses, whether it's, you know, increased facility fees, because obviously the facilities now have less ice time or less gym time or whatever you want to call it. So they may have to charge a little bit more to, you know, even for them to stay afloat. So that certainly gets handed down to the user groups. And then, you know, lost revenue from program cancellations or registrations, you know, lost registrations. So those areas will certainly help our groups stay afloat and keep their programs running for a while. I'm not sure what the level of funding will be. Depends on how many apply, I suppose. And we certainly encourage all of our groups to apply for that funding, because it is available to all of our provincial sport organizations. So that's definitely a tremendous, that will be a tremendous help to all of our organizations, and for those that were able to take advantage of the other programs like the CEWS and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that they could take advantage of. That certainly helped as well. So, no, this certainly, I think, for a lot of groups, this will be a welcome relief and something that's going to help them keep the programming going for a little while, for sure.
Two last quick questions before we let you go, and thank you for all your time today. It's appreciated. You were a competitive baseball player, a very good one. You played for Canada. What's happening with competitive athletes right now? Because you need that elite level of competition. You can't travel and you don't have the competition. I know you're part of a committee with my friend Rod Snow and Frankie Humber and others dealing with excellence in sports. What if you're an elite athlete? How is it going?
Yeah, I've had a lot of conversations actually last little while with some of our elite athletes, and we recently did our annual awards presentations, and, you know, we had people like Liam Hickey and these people that are, you know, they're trying to train and obviously without being able to leave the province. So they're basically doing it on their own, and, you know, a lot of them, I'm sure they're in contact with their national bodies and their coaches and stuff like that. But, yeah, they're still, you know, in the province doing as best they can, training, and there's no real, especially, I mean, I think we have it lucky compared to some of the other provinces in terms of what we're able to do. But yeah, for the most part, they're still, you know, training for the most part on their own and trying to find facilities where they can. And that's the other issue is finding facilities. And, mm-hmm. you know, some are getting a little bit of ice time or gym time here and there, but they have as much of a challenge as the rest of the amateur sport groups do in terms of finding training opportunities.
Yeah, it is very tough for all athletes, from the recreational to the competitive side at the moment. So in about the 2 minutes we've got left, wax philosophically for me on this one. I'm giving you an opportunity here. I know at the national level, national sports organizations believe they have an important role to play, not just in keeping their sports going, but in COVID recovery. What's your take on the role that your organization and all the sports organizations that you represent have in helping Newfoundland and Newfoundlanders get through COVID-19?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because that's one of the things that we're trying to constantly communicate to our members and to our user groups in terms of the guidelines. The guidelines are there for a reason, and, you know, public health, you know, they are the experts in the public health, and we had to take the direction from them in terms of what it takes to keep everybody safe. So, you know, when we talk about the liability insurance, and when we talk, I know a lot of people may not care about that, you know, when they're, you know, signing their kid up and stuff like that, but think about it from the other end, you know, as a volunteer. And, you know, none of this happens without volunteers. So none of our organization, none of our kids play hockey or baseball or soccer, whatever it might be, without volunteers. So as sport administrators, you know, that's our job, is to make sure, that's what we're trying to hit home with everybody, is, you know, without the liability, there's a huge risk to the volunteers. And, you know, we need to follow the protocols as best we can. And no doubt about it, there's been situations, and there will continue to be situations, where the guidance is not being followed to the T. But it's in everybody's best interest to make sure that we're following that guidance that public health is putting out, because that's the only way that we're going to, as a province, keep the virus at bay. And, we're lucky so far, I think. We haven't had a huge prevalence of it like other provinces. But that's one message I think people need to keep in mind. Yes, you know, we need our children involved in sports, but you got to think about the volunteers on the other side as well, in terms of protecting them, because the message that we're hearing loud and clear from our members is nobody wants to be that sport that has an outbreak. And, they don't want to be the sport associated with having a massive outbreak. So it's important for people to understand that the protocols are there for a reason, and we need to try to follow them as best we can.
And you brought it in perfectly, Troy, right at the news break time. Thank you for joining us today. Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador, good luck with what you're doing. It's essential to keep sport, as you described it, and the volunteers running well to recover from COVID. Thank you for the time today, Troy.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Appreciate it.
And we will be back with more on Target St. John's shortly.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Hi, it's Tim Powers sitting in for Linda Swain. Great to be here today. Well, we just had Troy Croft, the Executive Director of Sport Newfoundland and Labrador, on. Now we're going to have another well-known sports figure from our province on, Randy Ball, the race director for the Tele 10. How are you, Randy?
Fine, thanks, Tim.
Great to have you on today. We're looking at, as you heard in the introduction, sport in the time of COVID, how people are doing, challenges, opportunities, and where we go from here. And where we've gone from here with the Tele 10 is the virtual Tele 10, responding to the fact that the race couldn't take place this year, and you did try to reschedule it, have it in November. That didn't work because of public health guidelines and rules. How is this virtual Tele 10 going, Randy?
Actually, it's going very, very well. We're quite pleased with the results we're getting. Up till now, we have 1,450 people who've registered and taken part in the Tele 10. And I'm sure we still have to the middle of November, so I'm sure our numbers are going to increase. And like I say, we have, the kids' Tele 10, that's from 6 to 11. Then we have another group, which is the Tele 5 mile, 12 to 14. And then 15 above, we have the Tele 10 mile itself. And then, of course, for those who wish to compete, we have the 92 mile endurance relay. So we're very, very pleased with the way things are happening. And people are taking advantage of being able to at least virtually do the Tele.
Yeah, virtual races have come on stream because of COVID, because we don't have the opportunity to compete and run and stand together because of the distancing and all the other requirements. How is the whole running community adapting to virtual races? Because just about every race that exists has now converted to virtual. What are the pros and cons of that, Randy, in terms of the athletes?
Well, I think in terms of the virtual races, I mean, for recreational runners and, like non-competitive runners, I think it's a good outlet for them. I think the people who are most affected detrimentally by this, of course, are elite runners and are, strong competitive runners, because, there's no motivation really for them to get out there and practice hard and try and train hard, because there's no upcoming competition. So in trying to improve personal best times or going for records, it's just no motivation there. And like I say, for our lead runners in the province, I think these people are being affected the most. But for the general recreational runner or people who just like to get out and run on a regular basis, I think the virtual runs are good. But again, like I'd like to reiterate, it is definitely detrimentally affecting our lead runners.
It's interesting. So I'm not a competitive runner. I'm an old slug, and I've been doing the virtual run. I'm at 78, by the way. I'm almost there. But I have to tell you, it's different. As somebody who's run the Tele 10 three times, doing it not in St. John's is a very different thing. There's no Cornwall Avenue equivalent in July, which is right. Wonderful. Ottawa's very flat, as you know. But I've got some people here to pick it up, and it has been. And they're not all competitive runners. We're all slugs. slugs, but we've been competitive athletes in other spheres. And what I've found about it is it's at least giving people a sense of purpose. It's not the full-on competition. You're not necessarily testing yourself against your best self, but there's a purpose to it. And does that help in these COVID times?
Yeah, I think it certainly does, because like I say, I mean, a lot of people are like being shut down and barred in, and like at least with running, you know, you're outdoors and with social distancing is quite easy. So it's a very pleasant outlet for a lot of people who want to run and want to exercise on a regular basis. And like I say, especially with some of the longer endurance races, I mean, and for the younger kids too, in the very short races, everything can be done in segments. So it's quite easy for people to get out there now and, you know, and exercise and socialize, and, you know, as long as you follow the, you know, the protocols with the provincial health. I mean, I think it's a great outlet for them.
Now, there's been a lot reported in the media that people who haven't taken up sports like running or boating, things that don't require an indoor space and or minimum equipment, that merchandise sales have gone up for sneakers and boats and paddles. Well, what are you seeing about that? Are you seeing more people running as a consequence of COVID-19? Are you seeing that there's more activity as they, you know, try and replace CrossFit activity, or they replace, you know, yoga or what have you? Have you seen an increase in running and runners?
I can't really say for certain that I've seen, you know, an increase in runners, but I do, like, on a regular basis when I'm out around, I do see a lot of people out running. But I know, like, some of the sports that you mentioned earlier, like, you know, people are definitely picking up sports where their social distancing and the overall protocols are much easier to follow. I know in particular golf, because I am a golfer.
Okay.
And golf has gone through the roof. I mean, back in May and June and even part of July, when, you know, when the courses were running and were quite busy, it was very, very difficult to get tee times, and you couldn't buy any golf equipment if you wanted to. That's the uptake in golf has been just phenomenal. And I think the same thing we'll probably see for things like kayaking and canoeing and, you know, different types of water sports where the protocol and the social distancing is quite easy to manage.
Yeah, the first sport I think that opened in Alberta, and they opened up fairly quickly, was golf. And certainly you see here on weekends people out at all the various courses while they can and taking part. Just back to the couple of specific tele questions, then we'll get into some other general ones in the next segment. But what was the economic impact of not having the tele this year? And I asked that from the perspective of the big race we have here in Ottawa, which, you know, the Ottawa Marathon weekend, which is a huge race, generates millions of dollars and thousands of visitors. When you didn't have the race this year, what was the financial impact?
Yeah, well, for instance, like the Tele 10, of course, you know, with our numbers and our registration fees, it's the main fundraiser for NLAA, which is our Provincial Running Association. And the fact that, you know, we had very, very little income this year, it's impacting to the fact that, like, for instance, all the money that comes in from Tele 10 and through NLAA is redirected back to the athletes in terms of training and traveling and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, this year, you know, even though the income wasn't there, the traveling is not there as well. So even though it impacted us that way, it's at least, you know, there is a good side to it, because we didn't get the income that we expected. But the training and the traveling and, like, summer games and all that type of stuff, that's so far removed now on hold that, you know, it's a good story, but it does have ramifications down the road for sure.
How many hotel room nights, for example, because in a lot of races, that's lots of people come to do it. What percentage of runners come and do the Tele 10, and how many hotel rooms would they take up, and how many days would they stay? Do you have numbers on those things?
We really don't have numbers, no. And I would expect that it would probably be reasonably low, because a lot of people who come into the province to do the Tele 10 are Newfoundlanders who are living away. So they have family here to stay and stuff like that, like, you know. And, I mean, I'm sure the restaurants do pick up business. But I would say the hotels probably don't benefit a lot.
Yeah, that's true. There are many of us who do come back to it. It's a great time to come home that part of July. And though airline tickets are bought, and as you say, meals are purchased, and groceries are equally accumulated. What are you hoping for next year? Obviously, that the race can go off. Are you still looking at July? What's the plan right now?
Well, right now, I mean, our plan is to go ahead with the Tele 10 exactly as is scheduled for next year. We don't know what impact COVID is going to have, like, say, for instance, in the middle of next summer, because we hear so much about the second wave and, like, vaccines and all that type of stuff. But, I mean, come next July, if, for instance, if there's not a vaccine in place, I can't really see us having that kind of a gathering, you know?
And what will that mean? I know, again, I'll give you a contemporary example, which you probably know, but for the listeners' purposes, when they canceled the Ottawa race weekend here, which is the an Ottawa equivalent of the Tele 10 in terms of being the big event, the one that raises all the money, they asked people if they would renege on or not, would not look to get a refund, and most people didn't because that money goes to run the infrastructure. And I don't know what will happen this year if they don't have that race weekend. What kind of worry does that cause you, Randy, if you can't pull the race off this year, and what it means in terms of downstream effects?
Well, it would be, you know, very, very serious, like, to have that race canceled 2 years in a row based on the fact that, you know, I mean, that's our major fundraiser, and it's the money that our provincial association needs to help develop their athletes. And like I say, it's quite possible next year that, you know, depending on what the epidemiology is at this time or at that time, will affect our race. But, yeah, I mean, we would just hate to see to lose this race 2 years in a row. Economically, it would be a disaster.
And that is a major worry. I think we all are gripping with optimism and seeing new technologies coming forward, hearing politicians talk about vaccines and the like. But reality, July is not that far away, is it?
That's right.
And when do you start planning normally?
We usually, like myself and our executive director, George Stanoff, we, you know, usually have a couple of meetings like during the fall and early winter. But yeah, we start preparing for the Tele probably starting in May month on a regular basis, you know.
And a lot of work goes into that. All right, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back with more of Randy Ball, the race director for the Tele 10, have a general conversation about investment in sport, what he would like to see happen, how we work to protect these sports through these difficult times. I'm Tim Powers. This is On Target St. John's. Back shortly.
Now back to Linda Swain, On Target St. John's on VOCM.
Welcome back. Tim Powers sitting in for Linda Swain, and today we've been focusing on COVID-19 and its impact on the local sporting community, its athletes, its volunteers, its participants. Earlier, I was joined by Troy Croft. Right now, I'm speaking with Randy Ball, the race director for the Tele 10, and of course, the Tele 10 is one of the best-known sporting events that represents our province and all that is good and historic about Newfoundland and Labrador. Randy, just before we got off the air, before we went to break, we were talking about the potential impact of a second shutdown of the Tele 10. Yes, we're way away from July, but you need to start thinking about that right now. And we were there in that discussion. Just continuing a little bit with that, and remind me of the history. I'm ashamed I don't recall. Have there ever been other times when the race was canceled? Was it in the Second World War? Or has it been continuous for those 92 moving to 93 years?
I think you're right. I think it was canceled once during the war years, yep.
And obviously that was a significant global event, but it came back on stream. We haven't talked much yet about volunteers. You have tons of them, and they're awesome. Anybody who's ever run the Tele 10 has got to be so grateful for the volunteers from start to finish. How are they doing? Because so many of these people just get psyched up. This is the big event for the year. They love it. They take great pride in it. And when it doesn't happen, much like the experience with the athletes, it's gutting. How are the volunteers doing?
Like I say, I was in contact with my volunteer groups, you know, like before the Tele 10 got canceled, and they were, of course, just more than willing to come back and help out again, and we're very disappointed. And then when I sent the email out telling him that we're looking for a possible November date, they all came back on stream again. Like, our volunteers are, like you say, I mean, there are numerous, but they're so committed. They love the Tele 10, and basically they just keep coming back every year in numbers. And believe it or not, it's not as difficult as one would think to get that many volunteers, because they just love it, and they just like to come back every year and help us.
Yeah, I always remember their smiles. As I'm about to throw up, they're smiling. maybe people enjoy that. As it relates to the Tele 10 and running in general, what kind, given the circumstances, there's trail racing happening, and for people who don't know trail, obviously you're different than pavement. You run on a trail, and you tend to be more spaced out just by the nature of the race. Are there modified versions of running or the Tele 10 that you could look at, or is that just not worth looking at or too complicated to look at, other than the virtual that you're doing now?
Well, to be honest with you, we haven't looked at any variations of the Tele 10, but come next year, like, we may be looking at trying to possibly incorporate a Tele 5-mile race, because we're finding with the virtual races that we are getting a lot of younger runners that are interested in doing our virtual runs, but are basically, for lack of a better word, legally too young to be doing that type of distance. And another thing, a lot of our runners and walkers are getting up in age, and maybe...
Jeez, Randy, don't bring ages in here. My God, we're all aging, buddy. Come on.
And a good option, or maybe a better option for them, might be a 5-mile Tele. So, yeah, we are looking at possibly implementing some changes down the road.
We threatened, my sister and I, we ran it together last year, and we threatened my mother on her 80th birthday we'd push her along in the wheelchair. So she'll like that version, as she cuts me off yet once again. Governments have been helpful. I think most sporting organizations across the country would argue that, and everybody's going to government because they're the one big bank in town, the tourism industry, oil and gas industry, the airline industry. Are you happy with the way government is helping the sporting community? And what more do you think they can do, provincial, federal, municipal, whatever level of government?
Well, you know, with the endowment that we got recently from the federal government, like for directly related and promoted just for sports and sports in general and sports governing bodies, I think it's something that a lot of people were looking forward to, because everybody that's involved in sport, you know, our provincial sports organizations and all the way down, like, have been economically impacted so negatively that, you know, they are looking for as much relief, as much support as they can get. But on the other side of the coin, you have to look at, like, the whole picture. And, I mean, I know sports are important and healthy living is important, but, you know, there are other needs that are probably more important in terms of money and employment and security for families and making sure that they put bread on their table. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. The other side of that, of course, though, too, is in the sports businesses and amateur sports employ a lot of people. So some of them are not getting bread on the table, too, as you well know. It's a tough one. I agree with it, because I think often people look at sport and they look at the mess that was the CFL advocating for a bailout, or they look at the NHL and the special treatment that they got. Amateur sport, as you and I know, is very different. It's all those volunteers we were talking about spending their own money to get things done.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to ask you, does it help, again, in this segment of questioning, again, looking at the government and looking at the role of political leadership in sport? Premier Fury is a runner. He just was very helpful to the Aqua Arena. He's posted a lot of visuals of him running. Kathy Dunderdale ran the Tele 10. Paul Davis, the former premier, used to run. Does it help both the community and the reputation when our political leaders, not just for the photo op opportunity, are attuned to running and participating in running? Does that have a positive benefit?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. I think it has a very positive effect on running. And like I say, I mean, when we have, you know, our political leaders out taking part in our Tele 10 in particular, I think it has a lot of good implications for the sport in a lot of different ways. It's very important.
Well, and one of the things the federal Liberals have done with the Prime Minister, who likes to run, is showcase him running, and that helps encourage people to participate often if they're, you know, they don't have a rabid partisan position on the leader and their perspective. Just before we go, and we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, I want to get into this, what do you think is going to happen to those competitive athletes then we talked about earlier? If COVID drags on, if some of our competitive runners can't race, are we going to see early retirements? Are we going to see maybe people look elsewhere and not get into competitive running? What do you worry about on that side for the competitive runners and the lack of competition because of COVID-19?
Yeah, I think you made a very good point there, Tim, because I think in any sport, and I know some, you know, like for instance basketball and swimming and a lot of our other sports where our elite athletes are being set back big time because of the COVID, that, you know, I mean, if this continues for longer than we want it to, then I can see, you know, some of our top provincial athletes in different sports probably looking at it early retirement, because, you know, if you're working hard and training and doing everything that you need to do to be the best you can in your sport, like, you've got to have the competition. And if the competition is not there, like, you know, for, let's say, 2 years, then now you're looking at a third year, and it's hard to keep yourself mentally and physically prepared for that type of a distance.
And the Tele 10 has been a great showpiece for some of our, you know, Olympic caliber athletes. Paul McCloy obviously comes
yes.
to mind, and others. It was a vehicle I remember growing up where we got to see an Olympian before our very eyes, and it inspired many young people to race. And that whole class around McCloy, Peter Lewis, and Dave Will, and the other Peter Brown, they were Harold St. Croix. They were all.
Yep.
Of that era, and they were local sports legends. How important is the Tele 10 for that purpose, showing and creating these aspirational moments, not just for would-be athletes, but for Newfoundlanders and Labradorians to look and say, hey, that person represents me and my province on the Olympic stage? I remember we all had such great pride about Paul being in the Olympics. We were chest-pounding moments.
Yeah, that's true, because, I mean, and not just in running, but, like, for instance, any sport where our provincial athletes make it to the Olympics or make it to the international stage, you know, like you mentioned those runners, and like, do we have, like, you know, like Carl Ingme, who's done so well, like,
yes.
in basketball for the province. I mean, like, these people are, they're inspirational to our young athletes, and like you say, if they say, well, you know, these guys did it, then that's a real motivation for them to continue. But like I say, when we get to the elite level and they're at that stage where they need that competition to get to the next level, and it's not there, then it's very, very detrimental to those athletes.
It is detrimental to those athletes and to the people that love and support them, because there's a whole network of people who give all their time and efforts, not just driving people to hockey practices, taking people to track meets and all over the province and the country. And all of that requires a full team. All right, Randy, I'm going to leave it there with you. Thank you for making your time. We're going to keep our fingers crossed that some way, somehow, the race goes off in July, because it matters so much to the province, not just those who participate and volunteer in it. And thank you for all the good work you do.
Thank you, and looking forward to seeing you at the start line next year.
Yeah, you'll be seeing me way in the back, but that's all right. Thank you, Randy.
Okay, bye.
All right, that was Randy Ball, the race director for the Tele 10. Of course, we spoke to Troy Croft earlier. COVID-19 sport is having a pronounced impact, and don't just think of it, as I said, as professional sports. There are lots of sports organizations, volunteers, and leaders who are doing their best right now. Thank you for supporting them. They need more of your support, and they need more of your encouragement. We won't heal without a healthy sports system. That's it for me. That's On Target St. John's. Thanks for listening today. Much appreciated. I'm Tim Powers.